Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. Jonathan and David's friendship would transcend titles. David is, at this point, a shepherd boy who's defeated a giant. So he's got some fame and some renown. Jonathan, on the other hand, is who? The next in line for the throne. And so their friendship will transcend their socioeconomic status, the status of their families. It will even transcend David's relationship to Saul. As we'll see in the upcoming chapters, Jonathan puts his life on the line or puts his relationship with his father on the line to protect David, to do the right thing by his friend. The text also tells us that Jonathan and David make a covenant together. In other words, that is a binding agreement between the two, that the two would do right by each other. They would treat each other with certain respect and admiration, and they would help each other out. Not a contract, but a covenant that they would put together, saying, if I don't hold up my end of the covenant, in essence, may you take my life. That's how serious this relationship between the two of them is. All right? And so this relationship, as we'll see, maybe not the rest of this week, but as we'll see next week and in the coming weeks, is very significant. And so we see that starting right here with David's defeat of Goliath and with his coming in. Jonathan loves David so much that he even gives David his royal clothes and armor and sword and all that. The text tells us that Jonathan takes off his robe and puts it on David. That Jonathan takes off his armor and gives it to David. He even gives him his sword. Now remember, who are the only two people in Israel that have swords? Saul and Jonathan. Well, now David has Goliath's sword, but that's it. So Jonathan says, here, take my sword. He says, take my armor, take my bow, and even take the belt there. It's the belt that would hold his sword as well. And so Jonathan gives David all of his stuff as a sign of respect and friendship and the covenant that they made together. Now, in verses 5 through 9, Saul makes a very wise decision. The decision that Saul makes is he sees David. In fact, he sees so much potential in David, he doesn't let David go back to his home. He says, in essence, saying, hey, you need to stick around with me. That's a great decision for Saul. And Saul sees potential in David. And so Saul, in verses 5 through 9, sends David out to be a commander in the army. And the text tells us that in verse 5, that David was successful wherever Saul sent him. So in essence, David followed kind of the trajectory of David's military career here for a moment. He has no experience in the military except for what? Killing lions and bears. He comes to see his brothers, sees Goliath, and says, hey, I'll fight him, wins the battle, then leads the rest of the Israelite army to defeat the Philistines, come back and talks to Saul, and Saul says, hey, stay around with me. Then Saul puts him in command here, and he's successful in wherever he went. Then the text tells us that David was promoted to, and here's the language, leading, it's on the screen, over the men of war. So, see the comment? And David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him, so that Saul set him over the men of war. What does that sound like? He's a general. He's a commander of, not an army, but armies, plural. All right, you see that? So he started out shepherd, kills Goliath, wins a battle, is successful. He's so successful that Saul can't ignore it. And so Saul promotes him to over the men of war. You get this trajectory, okay? You see, Saul, David is on the what? He is on the rise. All right? This is great for Saul because David's success is Saul's success as well. Saul and his kingdom are being successful on the back of David's success. This is great. Saul has made a great decision. And so David continues to be successful. Now let's read a few verses here, because this is going to get us into the rest of the story. Verse number 6. Let's pick it up. Now, you got to follow along. You follow along on the screen. Follow it on your Bible. Pull it up on your phone. Here we go. As they were coming home, who is they? David and the men of war. Maybe Saul's in the group. When David returned from striking down the Philistine, all right, so David, the women came out of all the cities of Israel. All right, you got the picture? David and the army have been at war. They're coming back. They have struck down the Philistines. And the victory parade is going, you know, confetti, ticker tape, whatever. Whatever they did in ancient Israel. Palm branches, maybe. Who knows? You know, throwing dirt on the ground. I don't know what they did, okay? Who knows? But here's what they did. The women came out of the cities, plural, of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. Now, why would they be meeting King Saul, even though it's David and his men who won the victory? Really simple answer. Don't think about it too hard. Because he's the king, right? I mean, it's like in politics today. Even if the president has nothing to do with the economy, it's the president's economy. Even if they tank the economy, it's not their economy, it's the previous guy's economy. You was okay to laugh right there. I mean, you see how that worked? Like, if the president wins, even though he may not have done anything to win, it's his victory to win. Right? It's the same thing here. David and his guys are the force on the ground, but it's Saul's victory because Saul's the king. And everybody's coming out to meet the king on his victory and the guys who won the victory. All right, you got the scene. David's on the rise. Things are going good. Verse 7. The women sang to one another as they celebrated. Listen carefully. Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his 10,000s. What? Now, if this was a movie, there would be some climactic music or ominous music right here at this point. Because now let's read verse 8. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. All right, that was skipped way ahead. Sorry, that was my fault. I did not put the right verses in the thing. Let me read it with you. Let me read verse 8. Saul was very angry, and this saying displeased him. Listen to what he says. He said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands. Listen to the last line. What more can he have but the kingdom? Saul don't know it yet. God's already given him the kingdom. We know it because we kind of know some of the stuff Saul don't even know. Saul is exasperated, like, what else they want him to have? They want him to be king too? In the background, you're like, well, he kind of already is. You just don't know it yet. And so Saul is angry. And we're going to talk about it in a minute when we get to the kind of main idea application, this kind of process. But this moment right here is a change in David and Saul's relationship. From this point, up to this point, Saul has loved David. He's put him in command. He's given him more command and more command and has celebrated his victories. But from this point forward, things will be vastly different in David and Saul's relationship. Let me show you. Here's what happens. All right. In verses 12 through 16, now we can read this. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. And so this harmful spirit that we talked about a couple weeks ago that tormented Saul comes over Saul again. And David is with Saul because Saul has told David, you need to stay with me. And so David has done what he does before. He plays the lyre. That's that little harp-shaped thing, right? He plays it. But this time, It doesn't soothe Saul's soul. Well, a lot of tongue twisters today. It does not soothe Saul's soul. Okay? Whew. Thank you. I appreciate that. So what happens is Saul, because what would the women chant? Saul has killed his thousands, David his tens of thousands, and Saul was angry. He gets very angry at David. And the text tells us that he takes a spear and determines in his mind to kill David. Because that will solve all of his problems, right? But notice what the text tells us. It tells us that Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But the text also then tells us that David had to evade Saul not once, but twice in this moment. So it's the movie scene where, like, this is the way I envision it. This may not be the way it actually happened. But David's on one side of the room and Saul's on the other, and Saul's, rah! And David's like, oh, 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 and he's jumping around, like, oh, and he throws it and he misses, and Saul pulls it out of the wall, and David's like, trying to make for the door, and Saul throws it again, and David, And he doesn't kill David. He tries to, but he doesn't kill David. And in that moment, he realizes, well, the Lord's with him. Maybe I can't kill him, so let me just ostracize him. Because what happens after that, so this is verse 13. So Saul removed him from his presence and made him a commander of 1,000. Do you see what happened? David was on the rise. He was successful wherever he went. And so what did the verse we read earlier say? Saul put him over the men of war, as in like all the men of war. And then Saul's okay with that until David gets more praise than him. And so Saul tries to kill him. But when that doesn't work, what does he decide to do? Well, you're not the commander of the men of war anymore. You're going to be demoted to the commander of just 1,000 run-of-the-mill soldiers over here. So he tries to sideline David. If I can't kill him, well, let me just sideline him over here so that he won't get as much praise as he would have if he was the commander of the men of war. But guess what happens? The Lord is with David, and he has success wherever he goes. And so Saul's attempt to sideline David does not work. Because in verse 15 it says, and when Saul saw that he had great success, he stood in fearful awe of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, for he went out and came in before them. In other words, David's success kept growing and growing and growing no matter what Saul tried to do. He couldn't kill him, so he sidelined him. But God was with him, so God blessed him, so he was even more successful. And by this time, when it says all Israel and Judah, that's everybody in the kingdom started to realize just how good David was, right? So, you got that kind of storyline. Saul loves David, does a good job putting him where he needs to be, till David's success is greater than Saul's success, and then Saul gets jealous, tries to kill him. That doesn't work, so he tries to sideline him. And this section of the story ends with, that's not working either. Now, the second half of chapter 18 is Saul changes tactics. And he's going to use his daughters as pawns, terrible, as a tactic to get rid of David. So the second half of the chapter starts in verse 17. And in my Bible, the title is David Marries Michal. But that's not how the story starts. Because remember, Saul had told the army that whoever killed Goliath, he would give his daughter to. So verse 17 says, then Saul said to David, here's my elder daughter Merib. I will give her to you for a wife. Only be valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles. For Saul thought, let not my hand be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him. So in other words, he's like, hey, I promised I have to give you my daughter, but if I do, you've got to continue to fight for me. And in the back of Saul's mind is, maybe the Philistines will just kill him and I won't have to. Right? But David does not accept the offer because, and we'll see this in a minute, David does not think his family is from the right clan or from the right social status to be the son-in-law to the king. He says right here. And David said to Saul, who am I? And who are my relatives, my father's clan in Israel, that I should be the son-in-law to the king? So David doesn't accept because he's like, hey, look, my people, we're not good enough to be in the royal family. Okay? So he says no. Well, then Saul marries that daughter, Merib, to another guy, but Saul finds out that another daughter of his named Michal, the text tells us, loves David. So he has another thought. Aha! I will use Michal. Now Saul's daughter Michal loved David, and they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. So he goes, and he says, this is verse 21. He says, Saul thought, let me give her to him. Listen to the language. That she may be a snare for him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore, Saul said to David a second time, you shall now be my son-in-law. All right, so follow with me. David's on the rise, kills Goliath. Saul says, he's got military ability. Let me put him in command. He has success wherever he goes. Saul says, well, let me put him over the men of war. He has success wherever he goes. Until David gets more praise than Saul. Then Saul, what does he try to do? Kill him. That doesn't work. Let me demote him. That doesn't work. Let me marry him off to my oldest daughter. And let me use my oldest daughter as a pawn in my scheme. And that doesn't work. Because David's like, no, I can't do that. So then he finds out another daughter loves David. So he says, aha, let me use this love of hers as a pawn in my game to get at David. And did you hear what he said? May she be a snare. He don't care about her daughter. He wants her to be a snare to David, to trip him up, to entangle him. And at worst, maybe the Philistines will again take care of him. So, the word gets to David, and David again is like, hey, look. And this is where we realize why David probably says no to marrying Merib. Okay? David says, no, I can't do this. I don't have the money to pay the dowry that you would require for me to marry your daughter. We're not that rich. We don't have that kind of money. Right? That was kind of the way, like, you would have to pay a bride price to the father in order to marry his daughter. And David's like, look, we're just shepherds. We don't have that kind of money. And Saul says, guess what? Instead of paying me money or land or cattle or property or possessions, guess what? I've got a win. You know, usually it's a win-win situation. This is a win-win-win situation for Saul. He says, guess what? All you have to do is pay me in specific pieces of skin from uncircumcised Philistines. 100 to be exact. And Saul and David's like, I can do that. So David goes out, and before the allotted, there's obviously a time period that he has to do this in, and before the time period runs up, the text tells us that David not only comes back with 100 pieces of skin, but he comes back with 200. Right? Now, in Saul's mind, this is a win-win-win for me. Why is it a win-win-win for Saul? Number one, if he completes the task, there's 100 less Philistine warriors that we have to deal with. That's a win. If he doesn't complete the task, what happens? His stock among the people, and he doesn't have to be my son-in-law. And what's the third win? The Philistines, in his effort to do this task, might kill him. Win, win, win. What Saul did not account for was David's overachieving attitude. Right? Because when he comes back with not 100 pieces of skin, but 200 pieces of skin, I can guarantee you, this is kind of in between the lines of the text, everybody in the court, when he dumps them out, goes, and goes, wow, look at David. Wow, look at David. Man, David is the man. Word had to have spread like wildfire in dry land when David comes back, overachieving, doubling the requirement, right? So what is Saul forced to do? He's forced to give his daughter in marriage to David and somewhat be a little bit humiliated that David overachieved this momentously, monumentally, right? So the chapter ends, verses 28, 29, and 30. Let's read those. But when Saul saw and knew the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him, Saul was even more afraid of David. So Saul, listen to this last line, and I'm going to make a very key point. So Saul was David's enemy continually. And then the commanders of the Philistines came out to battle. As often as they came out, David had more success than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was highly esteemed. All right, so that, there's that line. I want you to notice this really quickly. In verse 29, so Saul was David's enemy continually. Notice there is not reciprocity of enemies between the two of them. Notice it is... notice that the text says, so Saul was David's enemy continually. Not, and it doesn't add a comma, and David was Saul's enemy continually. There is not a reciprocity of angst between the two. Saul is being the enemy figure toward David. David is not reciprocating that by being the enemy toward Saul. This is totally a one-sided affair, as we will see in the next few weeks even more. This is totally one-sided. Saul is doing everything he can to undermine David and kill David and ensnare and entrap and do everything he can to diminish David's success. But no matter what he does, David has success because the Lord is with him. Okay? So do you see the story? David kills Goliath. Saul puts him in command. Good decision. David succeeds. Saul says, hey, commander over men of war. David succeeds again. And Saul is loving it until the point where David gets more praise than he does. Then Saul tries to kill David. That doesn't work. He tries to demote David and sideline David. That doesn't work. Then he tries to use his oldest daughter to entrap David. That doesn't work. Then he tries to use another daughter who loves David to ensnare and create a win-win-win for him. And that doesn't work. And so this whole chapter, in one sense, if you wanted to kind of sum up this whole chapter, it would be Saul tries to kill, ensnare, sideline, and entrap David, but fails at every turn, right? Saul keeps trying to push David aside, but he can't. And the reason he can't is because the Lord is with David. Now, I want to give you three ideas, really, and we're going to hang on the first one a little bit longer because I really think this is the core, one of the core ideas, maybe the core idea of this. And I've said kind of some of this in this trajectory, right? Saul starts off and he loves David, right? We've seen that. What is the turning point for when Saul doesn't love David anymore? We've talked about it. What is it? That's right. When David gets more attention and more praise than Saul, okay? Now, the text tells us that Saul becomes jealous, but I would offer you this, that jealousy is not where Saul's problem started. The seeds of Saul's jealousy were sown way before. All right, and so I want to kind of walk you through what I see is kind of some this happens, then this happens, then this happens, and it ends with Saul trying to murder and marry his daughters off as pawns against David, okay? So we see jealousy and we see fear, but there's a step that's back here. The text doesn't tell us this explicitly, but it does imply this. And the seeds are actually sown way back in chapter 17. And here it is. The seeds that are sown that grow into jealousy are mediocrity. Okay? Now follow with me. It's mediocrity. Saul becomes a mediocre king. He starts out strong, makes terrible decisions that compound among themselves, and then becomes mediocre. Do you know what the definition of mediocre is? Mediocre is the best of the worst and the worst of the best. Think about that for a minute. Mediocre is you're the best of the worst teams, but you're the worst of the best teams. What does that mean in sports terms? You go 500 every year. Your football team ends up 5-5. Hey, guess what? If you're a college football team, you go 6-6 and make it to a December 22nd bowl in some place you've never heard of by some company that you've never heard of. But you made it to a bowl game. Mediocre. I mean, you didn't go 5-7, but you sure didn't go 11-1. That's mediocre. That's who Saul is. That's who Saul becomes. He becomes a mediocre king. He's not terrible. He's not a dictator. He's not like the what would be the kings of the Assyrians. But he's sure not the best king that Israel ever had. He's mediocre. And the seeds of mediocrity produce jealousy. So if you're sowing mediocrity, the fruit that comes up is jealousy. Okay? And here's why. Two things. The great theologian, Coach Nick Saban, said it this way. Mediocre people hate, think about it, mediocre people hate high achievers. And high achievers hate mediocre people. Now, let me ask you this. Why do mediocre people hate high achievers? As it is related to this story right here. All right? Think about that. I'm going to give you just a couple. Why does mediocre Saul hate high-achieving David in this story right here? Now, we could say the simple answer is Saul notices that the Lord is with David and not with him. And that's absolutely part of the answer. But I want to give you one other idea. Mediocre Saul hates high-achieving David because mediocre Saul could have had the success that David had if he was willing to do what David did. Think about it. Come with me. How many days did Goliath, we read it last week, how many days did Goliath go in and out and taunt the Israelites? Anybody remember? 40 days. Saul had 40 days to trust the Lord. Saul had 40 days to remember all that God had done in his own life at the battle with the Ammonites at the beginning of his reign. He could have remembered how even though he sinned greatly and offered the sacrifice in chapter 15, God forgave or God used him to lead this great victory against the Philistines. Even when he was disobedient in chapter 17 or 16 and didn't do what he was supposed to do with the Amalekites, God still gave him his grace. He could have done what David did. He had 40 days. He could have said, I'm going to trust in the Lord and I'm going to go out there and with the Lord's help, for the battle is the Lord's. You may say, oh, wait a minute. He can't go out there. He's the king. What if the king dies? What will happen? But here's the reality. That's what leaders do. Leaders lead, bosses dictate. Saul had every opportunity to be the leader God meant for him to be, to trust in the Lord, to say the battle is the Lord. But he chose not to. And then when little old scrawny David, who couldn't even fit in his armor, said, I'll take on, and was adamant and adamant over and over and over, Saul was like, okay. So why was Saul jealous of David? It wasn't just because the women are saying, Saul's killed his thousands and David's killed his 10,000s. Because he knows it could have been Saul has killed his tens of thousands and David has killed his thousands. But he was unwilling to do what it took to do what David did. So what happens? It becomes jealousy. If you've played, you don't even have to play sports. You could be a business, you could in business and in sports. There's all these people that we come in contact with that are jealous of the people who succeed. But the reason they're jealous is because they want the success, but they are unwilling to do what it takes to get there. So they just sit back and they soak and they get jealous. And then if their jealousy goes unchecked, just like Saul's jealousy goes unchecked, what does the jealousy turn into? Fear. Mediocrity, the seeds of mediocrity, when they are ready to harvest, you get jealousy. And jealousy unchecked turns into fear. And if fear is left to run amok, what happens? Hysteria, delusion, crazy ideas, and you end up trying to pin your best military leader to the wall with a spear. And then when that doesn't work, you instead of promoting him, you depromote him. Demote, that's it. Thank you. Appreciate that, Paul. Demote him and try to sideline him over here. And then when that doesn't work, then you use your own family as pawns in your game. And when that doesn't work, what do? Well, we're going to read some more chapters, right, about what happens. So this chapter is a cautionary tale for all of us in here this morning. That if we allow mediocrity to go unchecked, it will breed jealousy. It will fruit into jealousy. And when we harvest that jealousy, it will very likely turn into fear that causes us to have delusionary, hysterical, crazy ideas that usually don't end well. Now, that's the negative side of this story. What's the positive side? The positive side is this. What is the antidote for this trilogy? Mediocrity, jealousy, and fear. What's the antidote? Well, it's whatever David did. What did David do? Really simple. He trusted in the Lord. That's it. The antidote for all of this is simply trust in the Lord. David trusted in the Lord here. We'll see he trusted in the Lord in this chapter and in this chapter and in this chapter and in this chapter. Right? That's the antidote to not get down this road. Now, here's the other two things that this passage teaches us that tie really closely into this trust in the Lord. And I want to quote Jesus and Paul to get these last two ideas across, because they're kind of separate sides of the same coin. Jesus says in John 16:33, he says, "I have said these things to you that you may have peace. In this world you have tribulation. But take heart, I have overcome the world." And Paul says in Romans 18:31, if God is for us, who can be against us? Here's also, when you trust in the Lord, absolutely you need to realize that you will have trouble. That you will have trouble. David had trouble. Was David doing anything to deserve the trouble? No. Was David doing what God had called him to do? Yes. Was David doing the right thing? Yes. Did David deserve, did he warrant Saul to try to kill him with a spear or secretly marry him off with his daughters to be a... No. But guess what? He had trouble. And Jesus says that if we trust in the Lord and we follow Him, we will have trouble in this world. It will not be roses and sunrises and crystal clear water at the beach. Right? With a great meal and a good sunset. Like, it will not be that every day. There will be peaks and valleys and crevices and ravines that you and I have to cross. But the other side of that coin is what Paul and Jesus end their statements with. Jesus says, I have overcome the world. And Paul says, if God is for us, who can be against us? And we see that in the story of David. David trusted in the Lord. He had trouble. But God was with him every step of the way and continued to allow him to have success. Now again, don't walk away thinking that if I trust in the Lord, even though I have trouble, I'll have success. And my success will look like however I define it. That's not what we're trying to get at here today. The success is that you're following the Lord and being faithful to Him. And if how that look, what that tangibly looks like is going to be different for each and every one of us. Right? Because God's called us in different areas, in different fields, with different skills and all of that. The point is, this story is a cautionary tale that mediocrity leads to jealousy, will lead to fear, which leads to bad things. Or we can trust in the Lord, may have trouble, will have trouble, but if God is for us, who can be against us? And Jesus has overcome the world if we'll just trust Him. And so you and I today, we have a choice. We have a choice to go out and be mediocre, jealous, and fearful, or trust in the Lord, knowing that we'll have a little bit of trouble, but also knowing that Jesus is with us, and if God is for us, who can be against us? So the choice is yours, as it is mine, that we've got to make every single day. We're going to be like Saul. We're going to be like David. You got to decide. I hope you'll decide to be like David. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.